Chapter 3, Early Risks and Challenges. As I said before, most of my childhood is a total blank, and my years in junior high are no exception. I only recalled two of my teachers, Mr. Chase, who taught history, and Mrs. Kavanaugh, who taught cooking, a required class for girls. I did not participate in clubs and do not remember any special friends except Katie, who lived on the other side of town, so we spent little time together. Is ADHD the explanation for my poor memory? Or is this a common adolescent issue? When I remember junior high, I think about loneliness. Because my birthday is in October, I was younger than most of my classmates, but children with ADHD often appear and act younger than their peers. In junior high, I wore braces and glasses and was flat-chested, so I was self-conscious and shy about my appearance. The friends I had from grade school were dispersed into several other homerooms. We had different classes, different lunch periods, and it was a much larger school. The one girlfriend I had in my neighborhood, Dale, became friends with Diane, who shared her interest in boys. She no longer spent time with me. I was alone after school to entertain myself. I came home from school and got a glass of milk and a piece of Mom's chocolate cake that I ate in the kitchen. Then I spent the rest of the afternoon lying on the carpet in the back of the living room, listening to the albums I received each month from the Columbia Record Club, sing along with Mitch Miller, My Fair Lady, South Pacific, and Elvis Presley. Despite my poor memory, I listened to those albums so often that I still know many of those songs by heart. Loneliness is certainly not unique to adolescents with ADHD, but feeling like you don't fit in is common for children with this disorder. We are seen as, and often feel like, the square peg that struggles to fit into the round hole. Another memory I have that might be ADHD-related is from a time when my parents were on vacation. I was 17, in my senior year of high school, and was home with my older brother, Elisha, now 21, on spring break from college and left in charge of Asa and me. My friend Paula came over for the afternoon. Paula was an outstanding athlete. She was of average height but had a sturdy body. Like me, she was an okay but not great student. But unlike me, she did not try to fit in. Paula went her own way, but we had fun playing tennis and skiing together. I don't remember her dating or showing up at the weekly dances held each Saturday night in the large auditorium of the City Hall. Paula lived at home with her father. I never asked or found out about her mother. I first met Paula when I took free tennis lessons at the courts in Leominster. These lessons were the only athletic outlet available for girls. When we started high school, Paula was the friend I usually got into trouble with, so now I wonder if she had ADHD as well. Some of our pranks were climbing the school's rarely accessed back stairs to Miss Study Hall and sunbathe on the roof, hanging a pair of men's underwear on the clothesline of our elderly English teacher, Miss Cooley, and sneaking out to Paula's car during school, which wasn't allowed, to listen to Alan Shepard's 1961 Space Flight. We were the obnoxious teenagers who wormed our way forward in the hour-long ski lift line at Mount Sunapee Ski Resort in New Hampshire, laughing at the angry stares or the irritated remarks we got. This day, I had a new mischief in mind. Paula, my parents are out of town, and my brother is busy studying. How about going for a ride in my mother's beach wagon? We could go to the drive-in in Fitchburg and order root beer floats. My treat. That's a tempting offer, but wait, I thought you didn't have your license. You're always complaining about that. You know I don't, but you have your driver's license and can give me whatever instruction I need. It isn't fair that my brother and sister got their licenses when they turned 16 and my parents won't let me. Come on, it'll be fun. You can count on me for anything fun, but are you sure it will be all right? Are you sure we can go and come back without Elisha finding out and telling your parents? Aren't you in enough trouble with them already? He's upstairs studying and will be at it for hours. Here are the car keys. No more talking. Let's go. We crept down the basement stairs, quietly opened the door to the garage, and hesitated for only a moment. I said, "Perhaps you should back the car out. It's a tight fit, and I might hit the garage door frame." Okay, but that's all I'll do. This was your idea, and I don't want to be responsible if anything goes wrong. I loved my mother's beach wagon. It had 3 rows of seats, so when our family of 6 went anywhere, we always went in the beach wagon. It had a white roof and hood and imitation brown wood panels along the sides. I loved its flared fins above the taillights and the recognizable Chevy grille that always looked like a wide, metallic smile to me. After Paula backed the car out of the garage, I took over. I practiced on the infrequently traveled roads nearby, learning to steer, step on the gas, and apply the brakes. We doubled over with laughter as I alternated between flooring the gas and slamming on the brakes. Soon enough, I felt ready to drive on Route 12, the main road to the 2 drive-ins that were 8 miles away. Our choice of drive-ins was the Dairy Queen, where we parked the car and went inside to order, or the A&W Root Beer Drive-In, where we shouted our order into the microphone alongside the car. Car hops, girls our age in skimpy brown and tan outfits with matching hats, brought our food on trays that hooked onto the driver's side. We chose the A&W. The hot dogs with mustard, relish, and onions with a side of French fries were a real treat compared to the canned spaghetti I had been eating at home. But the root beer that came in thick, frost-covered glass mugs with the A&W logo on the side sticks in my memory. Never since have I had such great-tasting root beer. So far, so good. We finished our food and were ready for the home stretch. However, when pulling out from the A&W, I had to make a left-hand turn in front of oncoming traffic. This maneuver required driving skills that I did not possess. When I made the traffic stop to let me pull out and failed to signal that I was turning, a police officer appeared and asked for my driver's license. Have I told you that I find it difficult, if not impossible, to lie? When he asked for my license, I truthfully answered, "I don't have one." The officer said, "You mean you don't have it with you?" There was a pause while I pondered various possible answers, but came up with nothing better than the truth again. "No," I said, "you heard me correctly, officer. I don't have a driver's license." He was perplexed as he thought about what to do or say next. "Well, I have to give you a ticket," he finally said, "and you will need to appear in court. And, young lady, get out of the driver's seat right now. You are not allowed to drive." My response was cheerful. "That's fine, officer. I don't mean to be troublesome. My friend Paula has her license, and she can drive me home." Once again, my risk-taking tendencies had gotten me into trouble. When my parents returned from their enjoyable vacation, when you have to deliver unpleasant news, timing is always important. I told them about my joyride and the resulting ticket. I realize you are probably interested in what kind of punishment I received, but I have to disappoint you. I don't remember that part of the story. However, living in a small community and having a father who is an attorney makes an enormous difference. My father went to the licensing bureau and got the ticket removed from my record. Although I did not realize it at the time, I am quite sure, looking back, that I was dealing with ADHD challenges in high school. The braces on my teeth had been removed, but I still wore a retainer I took out whenever I ate. It embarrassed me to put it on my lunch tray, so I always wrapped it in a napkin. After lunch, I often threw the napkin in the trash. Later in class, I remembered my retainer and rushed to the cafeteria to dig through the garbage. If I found my retainer, I would be relieved. Some days, I didn't find it, and my parents had to buy me another one. Losing my retainers is one of the few losing stories I remember before my diagnosis. However, since losing things seems to go hand in hand with ADHD, I am sure I lost many items before I turned 49 and got my diagnosis. Today, all the additional expenses people incur because of their ADHD are humorously called the ADHD tax. Despite this, it is not funny how expensive ADHD can be. Until I wrote this book, I never stopped to realize how expensive I had been, losing things, ruining or damaging items, and incurring fines for late bill payments and overdrafts on the checking account. Another challenge in high school was that the mechanics of writing were difficult for me. Children with ADHD often displayed deficits in tasks requiring coordination of complex movements, such as handwriting. In junior high, most tests required us to fill in an answer or to choose the best of several options. In high school, teachers expected us to write longer answers and compose essays as class assignments. What was a minor problem for me in my earlier schooling became an insurmountable one. I am left-handed, and my left hand curves above my writing, which causes my writing to be smudged. I didn't write legibly or fast. My hand tired quickly because I squeezed the pencil tightly, and as a result, had a permanent indentation on my middle finger. Organizing my ideas was difficult. I remember struggling to write an essay about the industrial age for my high school history class. I sat at my mother's mahogany desk in my parents' bedroom with a pad of white paper with blue lines. I started at least 10 times to write the essay and never got beyond the beginning sentences. I would read over what I wrote, was displeased with it, would bunch up each sheet of rejected writing and toss it in the wastebasket, sighing and holding my head in my hands. I could not organize my ideas enough to produce a few tolerable sentences. My father noticed my discouragement and came over to help. He quickly dictated a few opening sentences. How could he do this so effortlessly, I wondered. It must be because he was an attorney. I hated writing, the mechanics and the thought processes, so I avoided it whenever possible. But I could not avoid it when taking the college entrance exams. These required a written essay. I sat dismayed, unable to think of what to write and how to start. I watched the students around me furiously filling page after page while I still had not begun. I completed only 3 messy pages before the proctor called, "Time's up, put down your pencils, close your booklets, and pass them to the front of the room." It was a blessing to learn in the 11th grade how to touch type. After that, I typed my assignments, and writing got easier for me, as I could type almost as fast as I thought. After my diagnosis, I learned that children with ADHD often have trouble with fine motor skills, jerky movements, and poor hand control. This makes it hard for them to write quickly and legibly, and explains why I gripped the pencil so tightly. Even after I took medication, my handwriting challenges were not reduced. Medication only helps about 80% of people with ADHD and alleviates only some of its symptoms. Which symptoms are reduced varies with the person. Although we have some symptoms in common, ADHD expresses itself differently with each person. It is an axiom of ADHD that if you have seen one person with ADHD, you have seen one person. All brains are as individual as fingerprints. When I took a magnesium supplement at age 60, I was surprised that writing by hand became easier. The letters flowed, and it was not as challenging to hold the pen. However, just like taking medication for ADHD, I had to titrate the magnesium properly. If the dosage was too small, it did not make a difference. If it was too large, it might not work or cause undesirable side effects. The amount has to be within certain parameters to be effective. If I took 500 milligrams of magnesium every day and accumulated too much in my body, my hands got shaky. If I took too little, less than 4 times a week, my writing challenges returned. I found, too, that writing with a pen about the width of a Sharpie relaxed my hand and improved my writing. It's hard to describe, but when holding a larger pen, my hand and mind seem to recognize where the pen is without gripping it so tightly. I still write slowly and prefer typing whenever that choice is available. Of course, my writing difficulties are only one of the attendant burdens of ADHD, but still, improving any behavior is a victory that I need to celebrate. Myth: ADHD is overdiagnosed. Fact: there are many explanations for increased diagnostic rates, including improved awareness so more children and adults seek a diagnosis. a decreased stigma about neurodivergence makes parents and adults more willing to be diagnosed. The availability of many effective medications, so more people are likely to seek a diagnosis. More clinicians assess their patients, clients for ADHD, even in patients, clients who don't suspect they have this disorder. Research that shows a benefit to treating people with fewer than the prescribed number of symptoms.